Welcome to the Arena Decklist Podcast. I'm Jerry Thompson. Here with me, as always, is Brian Gottlieb. Still a little under the weather, but getting better, I hear.
Getting better. It's a slow and arduous process, but anyone who saw me at GP Portland this weekend knows what a disaster I was, particularly you, who had to share a hotel room with me and listen to me basically dying in the bed next to you for several of the days. So apologies to everyone who I came across. I did my best to try not to spread plague around the convention center. Hopefully I succeeded in that endeavor.
Yeah, no handshakes, no hugs, right? Mm-mm. Just like elbow bumps.
A lot of elbow bumps, yeah.
You talked about bringing a mask, but you forgot it.
I did.
That's just one of those things where I have so much respect for Japanese people and the culture where it's like, yeah, if you're sick or whatever, you just wear a mask so you don't get everyone else sick.
It's a tremendous idea. We should be more cognizant about it. I apologize to everyone for not thinking of that. I was washing my hands constantly, though, and tried to stay out of close proximity with people. I gave a few handshakes on Sunday when I felt a little bit better. Always, I assure you, after a thorough antibacterial treatment and a thorough washing before you got any handshakes with me. So hopefully everyone's okay. I apologize so much if I did anything to make anyone feel unwell, because this has been terrible. Like, I have been so sick for so long now.
Yeah, I'm sorry, man. I will say that I shared a hotel room with you and I feel great. You know, we were in separate beds, I guess. Maybe that helped, but
I hope so. I hope you get away from this. Nobody deserves this kind of sickness.
Yeah, man. I hope you feel better. I hope no one else at the GP got sick. But we weren't really around a whole lot for a few different reasons. I mean, we did show up, I guess. Do you want to tell this story? Like, the story to me of how we kind of arrived in Portland is funny, but I don't know if you viewed it that way or not. Or you're just like, oh, this is what life is.
It's certainly a weird set of circumstances how we arrived there. Basically, I drove to your house on Thursday, took your car, drove myself down Friday morning, and you flew in from the East Coast on Friday evening-ish, afternoon-ish, which is just like a really weird way to get a traveling group together in the same space, I suppose, when you look at it in retrospect. In the moment, though, you're right. I was just like, well, this is whatever. I didn't even consider it.
Yeah. Okay. So the entire time people are like, well, you know, what are your plans? And I'm just like, it's a long story, but you know, if you have 5 minutes, I'll tell you. And I think this is kind of entertaining. This is kind of a throwback to my earlier, very heavy in the grind Magic days, where early 2010s or whatever you want to call them, when I was playing in all the SCG tour events, right, I would book flights that was like, all right, I'll go to Atlanta and then DC and then, I don't know, Chicago or something, and then fly home. And in between every event, I would just like find someone's couch to crash on or whatever, someone I knew in that city that I could hang out with. And that allowed me to save a lot of money because it would be like $600 for three flights instead of like $400 per round trip flight.
Sure.
So yeah, just a lot of weird travel things like that happening. And I've mostly been better about this. Just being an adult and not trying to do like three weekends of travel in a row and stuff like that. But I started by going to the Command Fest in DC, which was a lot of fun. And I had booked my ticket from Thursday to Monday, and I was going to arrive back in Seattle and then was going to, you know, hang out, do the normal content thing during the week, and then ride down with you, I thought, sometime on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So Wednesday, before my flight, my best friend in the universe, Josh Cho, who lives in D.C., calls me. You know, we talk semi-regularly. And a while ago, I had pitched the idea of like, hey, I'm going to be in D.C. Do you have time? I mean, I know that he was coming up on graduation and stuff for college. And he was just like, nah, man, I'm going to be so busy. I can't do anything during that time. Like, maybe I can sneak out. We can grab a dinner or something. That's it. I'm just like, okay, cool. So he calls me on Wednesday and he's like, hey, oh, DC's this weekend? Really? I had no idea. I'm graduating on Thursday. You should just stay at my house and then come to my graduation.
Dramatic change in plans.
So after talking to him, talking to his wife, kind of getting a bigger view of the whole picture, I guess like one of the examples is Crystal, Josh's wife, was talking to him and a couple weeks before graduation, and floated the idea of inviting me to the graduation. And he was so stressed out because of like all the finals that were going on and everything that he was just like, nah, I can't deal with this right now. And she was just like, oh, okay, sorry, I'm going to leave you alone. And she just dropped it and didn't ask him about it anymore. And as time got closer and closer to him graduating, he got less stressed out, especially since his grades were coming back pretty good. He had a bunch of A's already.
Nice.
And yeah, then he was just like, oh, hey, yeah, you know, this is fine. It was probably fine the entire time. He just didn't want to like think about it, plan it, add anything more to his plate, right?
Sure. In those high stress moments, you're just like, whatever, don't care, don't have time for that right now. We'll deal with it in the future. And I guess that meant you had to kind of fly by the seat of your pants for what you're going to be doing in DC.
Yeah, so I that's kind of what I want to do was, you know, two birds, one stone, right? Go to the Command Fest, see a bunch of cool people, hang out and everything, and then try and sneak in some time with my best friend if possible. But I thought that was a no-go, so I just booked my flight to return as soon as possible. And then that kind of changed and was like, okay, I was in the middle of packing. So I like threw a bunch of extra clothes in my suitcase. I threw a microphone in my suitcase because I knew that we would have to record the podcast at some point. And I was just like, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'll figure it out. And after checking on flights and stuff like that, I was like, okay, flying to Seattle is not great. I guess I could fly into, oh no. So what changed was you said that you wanted to go down Thursday because there was a draft PTQ you want to play in.
Correct. Well, I wanted to be there Friday morning. So I wanted us to leave pretty early Friday morning, but the timing on that was tough, as I found out when I actually did eventually leave at about 5 a.m. on Friday morning from Seattle, and then was very sleep deprived, and that was a whole thing on top of it.
Yeah, I wasn't going to do that. So I assumed that we were going to go down Thursday morning, and since time travel is not invented yet, there wasn't any way I can make it back from Josh's graduation to Seattle by Thursday night in time for us to drive down there. So I was like, you know what, Brian, go to my house, grab my car, you drive down there, and then I'll just fly into Portland, because I looked at those flights and they're fairly reasonable.
And it all came together beautifully. No problems. Everyone made it to Portland. I got to play the draft PTQ. We nailed it.
Basically. This is one of those things where people are like, oh, I can't get the cards, or, you know, I don't know if I can make it or whatever. It's just like, make it happen. You know, if you want it badly enough, you can try and make it happen. And that's what I did. And I am very proud of myself for my problem solving abilities, you know?
Yeah.
And
we pulled a good plan together.
Trying to figure out all this random nonsense and just figure out weird solutions where it's like, I don't think a lot of people would have just been like, hey, take my car and, you know, drive it 3 hours to another state.
I think it was good problem solving. And I think it got me to something pretty unique, honestly, in Magic's history. I am having a hard time coming up with this ever happening in any other instance. Draft PTQ was a really cool thing to be a part of, and I didn't want to miss it. I know it always surprises people who like only engage with me through this cast and don't know me very well and often hear my takes on Twitter, which are pretty anti-limited as far as coverage goes. Limited is my favorite format of Magic. It is how I like to play Magic. It is also what I am best at by far. Like, it's not even close. I am a dramatically better limited player than I am a constructed player. And the opportunity to participate in a draft PTQ was just a huge slam dunk for me. I did not want to miss it, which is why I was so incentivized to find a solution. In any other instance, if it was a modern PTQ, whatever, I'd just say, oh, whatever. Whenever you get here, you get here. We'll skip the Friday PTQs.
Right.
This was actually something I really wanted to do, though.
Yeah, and I get that. I mean, it's not something that's super important to me, but I know that it is important to you, therefore I care, and I want to not completely decimate all of our plans because, you know, I just don't care about this thing, right? And it makes a lot of sense for Channel to run those, considering that their PTQs are often basically at the number where six rounds makes it a very, or like close to even cut, right? It's like, if you go undefeated, you will make the top eight. If you are 501, then sometimes that's good enough, but like people basically can't always draw in, and the 5-1s are kind of like in a scrum, but if the event fills up, it will be 8-6-0s advancing to top eight, which I think is cool. And then that means, ooh, six rounds, you can actually just do a draft PTQ and to run that on Friday when there's not a whole lot going on, especially like kind of early in the morning, it makes a lot of sense.
I can't tell you how much I hope this becomes a regular feature of Magic Fest GPs. I will attend more if this is something I can always do on Friday. This is just like the dream for me. And you have to generally have already achieved something to have access to high stakes games of draft. Like you have to have top aided a sealed PTQ, or you have to be at the PT, or you have to have day two to sealed GP. You are usually gated behind something, and that's fine. I mean, no real objection to that. But when I show up at a sealed PTQ, it is not because I am excited to play sealed. It's because I am hoping to draft and just skip everything and get to that opportunity right off the bat was really, really awesome. Yeah, just hoping for more of it for sure.
And stores, for the most part, don't typically run a lot of sealed events. You will often see random draft events more so than sealed. And the reason for that is that sealed basically requires very little babysitting. Whereas draft, you need to, you know, maybe mark the cards and do the call draft so that things don't get messed up and all sorts of stuff where it just requires more people to make the event run. And sealed basically just gets to be the limited format of choice for the Swiss because it's easier.
Because it's easy. Yeah.
Yeah. And that kind of stinks. You know, I think the vast majority of people prefer draft to sealed. Right.
Yeah. So and they did a good job solving the problems in this event, though. Like they didn't stamp everything. It was called. And then right after you drafted, you turned around and gave your cards to the person sitting at the table behind you. They registered them and then you got them back. And like, is that perfect? No. I mean, you could come up with some sideways scenarios where you could probably exploit in that situation. But like, close. It's close enough for our purposes here where I felt very comfortable with the way the event was run.
What they should probably do is you swap your pile of cards with the person in front of you, and then they give it to the person behind them, maybe. Because
that's okay. Yeah.
While you're turning around, you could potentially like add two, subtract two, right? You could just have like, you know, two mythics in your pocket or something. That seems like the most likely thing to me. Not trying to give anyone any ideas or anything, but that's the first thing that comes to my mind.
Yeah, that's a small little optimization that maybe if there's more of these, you could certainly think about. I mean, certainly they're trying to protect that information from your draft pod, which is why it doesn't really cross their hands ever. But you're right, just adding one extra pass seems like a very clean way to eliminate that problem. The cards never leave the table without supervision. Like real sleight of hand masters can break it anyway. They can break any form of magic, though, quite frankly. Like if you know sleight of hand, you have access to cheating all the time. So that's not what we're trying to prevent here.
Right. So, I mean, you cut out some amateur opportunistic stuff, which I think is reasonable. But then it's like, well, what if the person you pass your deck to, as they're passing it to the person behind them, they like look at it or something, you know, like then that opens the door for other things too. So it's not perfect. But if you're looking for like low investment cost solution, I think that is probably fine. But yeah, for these tournaments to continually happen at Magic Fest, I think that they need to find solutions to these problems to make people feel comfortable.
Yeah, but for the first one, it was very well run. It took a long time, for sure. Like, there was a large time investment, and I lost my win in round five, so I was there till the end, and then, like, had a chance at being one of the 5-1s to make it at the end, so I had to stay for the breakers to come up, and I finished 10th, so I missed anyway, and was just there for a very, very long time, but ultimately, I'm cool with that, because I got to play my favorite format for some good stakes, and was very, very happy for that fact.
Yeah, similarly to you, the majority of the content that I make is constructed, and I mean vast, vast majority, right?
Of course.
And that's because what gets people to click on it, for the most part. I mean, there are things like limited resources, where they have a huge following, huge fan base, but for the most part, you know, people don't tend to click on limited content as much as they click on constructed content, and the majority of my GP top eights are from limited and stuff like that, just like these little things that people don't know because we basically only make constructed content. So yeah, I mean, I appreciate limited. I do enjoy playing in sealed GPs, and sealed even is something that I enjoy more than most. But yeah, I mean, if given the chance, I would still play Constructed more often, but I'm certainly glad that these exist, especially if they're taking over Sealed.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing about Sealed, just like a personal reason why I haven't been able to engage quite as hard as I would like, I often don't have buys for GPs. Sealed without buys versus like Sealed with buys is very, very different, even more so than Constructed, where your edge is a lot more inherent in like your preparation. And I think you have a greater range against like non-buy players, and a non-buy player can just open the nuts pool, right? And you're pretty far behind at that point, whereas you're all on at least somewhat even footing as far as deck selection goes, and I can find an edge there and be comfortable in playing with it. So at least in my head, I had mostly talked myself off Sealed GPs for that reason. They get better with buys, but not my personal experience.
I mean, I could argue against a lot of that, but I don't think that's really necessary.
You could. I wouldn't believe you. So you're right. It's not necessary. Let's skip it and move on to something else.
Yeah. I mean, no one has buys anymore anyway, right?
That is true.
At least soon. So
very soon. Yes. And I am thankful for that.
Yeah. But I guess that means no Sealed GPs for you unless we actually get to sit down and have the 30-minute discussion as to why you're wrong.
No, if we all are on that same playing field, it's fine. When none of us have buys, I'm with it. Let's do it.
Oh, okay, cool. All right, I am in favor. All right, so you played the limited PTQ. I got in at like 1 p.m., had to wake up, I don't know, 5:30 a.m. Eastern. So like I woke up basically when I would be going to sleep on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. So I got in, took a nap. And then we hung out a little bit Friday. Saturday was the main event. You won two buys as a result of your 10th place finish in the PTQ.
Yep.
And I pulled out some Rakdos Knight cards for you.
Yep.
And then...
didn't feel good. Also forgot to register. So it kind of worked out in my favor. Like I didn't do the online registration, so I could have shown up at the site at whatever it is, 8 a.m. and probably gotten into the event pretty cleanly. The folks at Channel Fireball got in touch with me when I realized I had missed the online registration. Let me know if I showed up, it wouldn't be a problem. So I had a way in, but I was so, so sick. And as of when I went to sleep, I was planning on waking up, playing Rakdos Knights in the GP. And then I just coughed for like 6 hours straight and didn't sleep and had literal blinding headaches the next morning and gave up on the main event and just slept in. Definitely was the right call given how I was feeling.
Legit. Most of the time I will fault someone for things like that, but like when you're ill, I mean everything goes out the window, you know.
Right.
Like
and you experienced my illness firsthand, which probably also gave you a little bit of sympathy for what I was going through.
Yeah, I mean, obviously if someone's just like, oh, I was sick, like fake cough or whatever, like I'm generally I will believe people unless it's very clearly fake. But yeah, certainly in your case, seeing it firsthand and you just coughing all the time and you apologized and stuff. But like once I'm asleep, you know, you can't do anything to wake me up. So it did not bother me, did not keep me up. You were a delight. And part of that is years of being trained by sleeping in the same hotel as Josh, who snores very badly. So
good skill to have. I'm very jealous.
I mean, it was learned, I think. I don't think I just naturally have this ability, but regardless, yeah, we woke up in the morning. I guess we could talk about why I didn't want to play in the main event. I said if the tournament were over 500 people, I was not going to play.
Yeah. And what was it?
510. At least that's what the website said. But to be fair, it was like trending to be like around 500, maybe a little bit over. I thought it was still going to be over, but I didn't actually know the number until
Correct.
The tournament had already started.
We heard a nighttime number of like 480. So by that rule,
we
should have been waking up. But
No. So by my rule, I would just assume that there are 30 people who are going to show up in the morning.
But okay.
Anyway, standard's fine.
Fine. It's very interesting that we both were like ready to play the red-black deck that ultimately took down the tournament. Like, talk about how you found that deck. I think it's interesting how we were both in the same place by the time the event started. And we were both high on Jund going into the weekend. We posted on our Patreon we had intended to play that. And then last second, both were scrambling for these red-black cards.
Yeah. I just felt like Rakdos was a thing that never really got enough respect, and people would do things like still main deck Noxious Grasp and everything. And like, granted, there were two Simic decks that popped up that Noxious Grasp was pretty good against and everything, but people just never accounted for the Knight deck. There was never any actual hate for it. People would have Lovestruck Beast instead of Brontodon and just like lose to Embercleave. They would have no outs to Rotting Regisaur and stuff like that. So it just seemed like Rakdos was probably the best deck that no one was talking about. And Nick Prince suggested that we play that maybe like 2 weeks before the tournament. And I think it was also before the MC, but very little had changed. And if anything, things changed to make Rakdos look even better. So I was just like, yeah, I don't know. I kind of want to just like play this. And if I do play the event, just like play a nice short game of attacking people. And that sounded way more fun to me than going to Time with Food.
Yeah, I was right there with you. And given my state, I wanted something that had the potential for shorter games, at least. I know that prior to the event, Gregor Skowalski was posting on Twitter about finding a lot of success with Red Black Knights. I had played it a bunch back right when the bannings happened in the format for the Twitch Rivals tournament where I first played Jun Food. For most of that period, I was pretty sure I was going to play Rakdos Knights. I was high on the deck. I was speaking with a bunch of people about it on Friday, including Dylan Nolan, if you recognize that name. That's the person who ultimately won the GP with Rakdos Knights. He had been crushing online, mentioned that Seth Manfield was also playing it a bunch online, crushing. And it just seemed like really good results for these Rakdos Knights builds were popping up all over the place. And I was ready to believe in it. Had the Ember Cleaves picked out, everything ready to go, and just couldn't get out of bed. Missed opportunities.
Yeah, so you remember when I did the Grixis Knights deck on YouTube a while back?
I do.
So I got that deck list from Nathan Zamora, and He was the first person who was really just like, play four Embercleaves. And I was like, well, I want to shave one. He was like, no, don't, you're stupid, right? He's just like, it's wrong. Like, the deck is so much better when you have an Embercleave, and if you have an Embercleave, you don't care that you have the second one. And it took me a while to come around to that, but I did. And I would have been very happy to register for Embercleaves in the tournament. And Nathan Zamora, not playing Rakdos Knights or anything, but he did top four the GP with Teemer Adventures.
Yeah, really interesting looking list. And while we're talking about people who top four the GP, I don't want to forget about X-File, Felix Salou. A lot of friends doing very well in this GP, including also Emma Handy, who just missed top eight, lost playing a win-in against Logan Nettles, was playing and actually. And Nick also lost the top eight match. Yeah, just huge, huge friends of the Arena Decklist podcast with tremendous performances all over the place. Was a cool tournament to be around for the final rounds of and really get some good rooting interests going.
Yeah, Saturday night I went out with some folks, and one of them was Felix, and we shared a lift back to the convention center, and we're just talking about like him and his life and his approach to Magic and everything. And one of the things that comes up for a lot of people in his position is just like, you know, I haven't qualified yet and I really want to qualify. What is the best way to go about doing this? And we talked about how it feels good to win with a deck of your own creation or to not play the stock deck. And I have a lot of that experience from my career where I spent countless tournaments and just like spewed them off by playing random brews that I knew like probably were not going to win the tournament, right? But it's like I just wanted to like play my thing and hope that I got there, basically. But realistically, if my only goal was to win, it would have been better to narrow my deck selection, spend my time instead of, you know, trying to break it, just spend it learning the ins and outs of the format and whatever the best deck was and the matchups and everything. And so we kind of just talked about that. And it's just like my question to him was like, you know, what's more important to you? Do you want to qualify or do you want to like kind of pave your own way? And his counterpoint was sort of that he rose up by being a deck builder and getting noticed for those sorts of things. And that's certainly the first time I saw him was playing Nimbus Elemental in Modern and like 5-0-ing with it. So he does have a point. But at the end of the day, I still think that it is better to, you know, figure out what your goals are and proceed down that line, and whatever gets you closest to actually achieving that goal and trying to break it every time is kind of counterintuitive to that. That said, Felix did top four of the tournament and is now qualified. So
yeah, I kind of like the Felix approach. I'm going to be honest with you. Like, I don't think you have to go as far as breaking things wide open, but like, there is a foundation that in some sense Felix was leveraging. It's like a green black deck based around Vivian. And he had felt that his experience with the format had led him to some unorthodox conclusions that he believed in, but like, there was still some foundational work that had been done. It wasn't like he threw everything out. It's that he identified power points of certain decks and was like, okay, you could also go in this direction. And I would also point out someone like Chris Kvartek, who also did the same thing throughout this entire season. He was playing Simic Food. He was playing Green Black, but his list always looked different because he had put in the reps to make solid conclusions. And I don't think he made those changes because he said, I have to play something different. He made those changes because he said, this is an approach I believe in. And there's a thin line between making those changes so you have changes and you can say, look at how smart I am, look what I did, and making the changes that are actually correct in a situation. And you have to be real honest with yourself, and you have to understand which of those you are doing and back away when you're making changes just for the sake of changes. I don't think that was the case with Felix's deck. I think he had some real strong conclusions and came up with a really nice deck for the tournament.
I mostly agree with that. I do agree that it is a fine line, and you pointed to someone like Chris, but realistically, a lot of what Chris did was take an established archetype and tune it, right?
Sure, sure.
And possibly lean a little bit more into a proactive stance.
But his tuning was like 10 to 15 cards different. It's not like it's a small difference. It is a dramatic difference in tuning. Whereas like when I think of your tuning process, I expect you to find like the three best possible cards for the flex slot. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, yeah, but it varies, you know?
Sure, so, sure.
So in Chris's instance, right, it's like, okay, I have determined that I want Questing Beast to fight Golos and that a more aggressive plan is better in the mirror. You can't just slot in Questing Beast and hope that that accomplishes that. You also need like Brazen Borrower or whatever. And right. Then you cut Hydroid Crisis because it doesn't make a lot of sense with your game plan and everything. Like, those changes make sense, but fundamentally he's still just like, well, Gilded Goose Oko is the best thing to be doing, right? So
right.
I'm going to do that. And didn't really stray away from like the power of the format. And Felix Agreed. Did a little bit. Chris kind of like makes up for it too, where his stuff is more proactive. So he's going to get more free game wins when his opponents stumble and stuff like that. Whereas Felix's deck is like trying to play these long grindy games. And, you know, you and I have had this discussion that, you know, I still want to make a piece of content on this that is longer and further explores this. But like, talk about what has caused you to lose matches in 2019.
A general desire to play around everything is how I would term it. Giving my opponents windows to seize games back where maybe I could have closed the door with more aggressive, more risky plays that are risky in the moment. But when you actually like parse out the equity over multiple turns, it proves to be the correct play regardless.
So that leads to you playing the slower decks, and then you end up inevitably getting paired against some deck where you don't have counterplay to what they're doing because you're not proactive enough.
Right.
And in your quest to try and play around everything, you end up in a situation where you have no agency.
Correct. It happened several times at PTQs this year where, like, even if I felt myself to be a stronger player, I left no room for that to be reflected. It was just like, ultimately, they are bigger than I am, and I don't get to actually assert agency on any part of this game.
Yeah, so what are some examples of this? Because it was Golos against like some weird combo deck or whatever, right?
Yeah, the most pronounced one I ran into this year that immediately springs to mind was Golos Field against Grixis Fires, like Bolas-based right, Grixis right. Fires. And there was just no meaningful way for me to close the game. And like, certainly I could have built my deck probably like three cards different and left myself some agency. But it's not on my radar, and you can't put everything on your radar. So unless you're broadly building to that scenario, you are leaving yourself some holes in your game.
Or if you go the Kvartek route and you just lean more aggressive, right? You're never going to be in those spots where you find that if your deck does your thing and their deck does their thing, they just have you dominated. They come out
bigger. Right.
So, yeah, I think that that is a podcast in and of itself. But when I look at Felix's deck, granted he has interaction and things like Nissa that can get free game wins and stuff like that. But for the most part, I see a deck that does look like at various points, he could end up in the same situation that you were in because he's trying to play these longer games with like Finale to Eternity and stuff like that.
I think Questing Beast covers a lot of those holes. So I would push the combination of Questing Beast, Nissa, Vivian can cover a lot of those holes. Like you can find aggression and produce aggression almost out of nowhere a lot of the times. I will give you that. That is not what his deck is optimized to do.
Right.
But the fact that the window is still there is a very, very important piece of his strategy. And in those scenarios where someone's just like, okay, I'm going to take 30 turns of this game and eventually nothing you do matters, Felix gets to say, oh, wait, but here's Questing Beast and here's Vivian making it bigger. And now it does matter.
Right. So he does have outs, but I'm saying for just the majority of his game plan, right, is to like play longer games or try and play longer games.
Sure. I mean, I don't think you can discount longer games as like fundamentally flawed. There is a situation where correct to play longer games, but your point very much stands with several of the decks I have chosen. I think this is somewhere in between. This doesn't really draw my ire as another example of like leaving yourself the ability to be dominated.
I agree that this is not the best example. Certainly the examples that you gave me, like we were at that PTQ, that match happened. And I think that was the one that knocked you out or something. So like we talked about it briefly before you left.
Yep.
And then what we talked about was a thing that you thought about later. And then you were just like, oh, I thought about this tournament where this happened and this tournament where this happened. It was like, yeah, basically all of my losses this year have been a result of like this same phenomenon occurring. Right.
Right.
So those are better examples for sure. But I am merely stating that when you do show up to a tournament with a deck that is, you know, fundamentally a homebrew, you do likely have problems like this that are not necessarily things that are on your mind already.
Sure.
So for you, if you look at each tournament individually, it's like, oh yeah, you know, I just played against this deck that I couldn't beat and I lost. If you were Kvartek, he's just not really in those positions. He's not putting himself in those positions.
Yep. You get to steal some percentage of that game. And like to that effect, I played the modern PTQ this weekend and played Eldrazi Tron. And like I played bad matchups, lost to bad matchups, but I was in them. And like, if I have the play as opposed to the draw, I might just steal those bad matchups because you just have these proactive plans. So
yeah. You do powerful things. And even if you know you're up against a bad matchup, it's like, okay, let's mull the four, find Eldrazi Temple and Thought Not Seer and just give them the beatdown. And like, yep. Kvartek has that same opportunity. And granted, Felix's deck does too. You know, so yep. I don't want to rag on Felix or his deck choice. I am just saying that that is one of the risks that comes with building your own deck, is that it is not as nuanced and finely tuned as the things that are proven and successful, because the proven and successful decks are very good at things that are not even recognizable on the surface.
Sure.
So you are correct. It's a fine line. You should definitely walk it. If you think you have strategy or game plan or a few card choices that improve your deck across the board from the stock list that everyone else is playing, yeah, obviously do that. I encourage innovation, 100%. But it does come with risks.
Yeah, 100%. We've all felt it. We've all had the wrong deck for a tournament. We've all been there. You just have to know when to shoot your shot.
So in Felix's case, it's like, how long do you plan on doing this Magic thing? What are your end goals? And I mean, he's in his infancy as far as a Magic career is concerned. He is very bright, very smart, very talented, hardworking, like clearly gets it, right? He sky's the limit if he wants to put the time and effort in.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
But for me, where I see parallels of myself in him it's very easy for me to just be like, yo, don't do this, because I look back on my career, all the opportunities I've squandered by playing bad decks, and for however good my resume is, it could very easily be twice as good had I not been being an idiot and making those stupid choices.
Yeah.
So it all depends on what you want, you know? That's it.
One of the things about us becoming elder statesmen of the game, I always try and think back to not being an elder statesman of the game and people giving me this advice and how I just had to live it for myself before I would ever actually internalize it. So I don't bear anyone any like ill will for just being like, nah, I'm going to do this. And because I was there, I get it. Like sometimes you just got to get it out of your system. It's funny to look back on it now, very advanced in our careers.
If Felix is like, yo, I'm just going to these tournaments to beat up on some people with my sweet decks, cool. Kudos, you know? But if you're talking about, oh, I want to qualify and stack up a bunch of invites and play in as many Pro Tours as I can, it's like, well, those things are kind of at odds. So you just have to be very self-aware, very upfront with what your actual goals are and how you're going to try and achieve them. And for me, like, I wanted those things, but I justified it by, you know, there's always another tournament. There are going to be more tournaments, and like there were, right? But then 15 years later, you look at my results and there's things like Hall of Fame voting or whatever. It's like, okay, well, there's probably a few reasons why I'm never going to get in the Hall of Fame, but certainly not having like another PT top 8 or 2 or 3 or whatever is a big part of that.
Yeah. In retrospect, it would be nice to add one more to the old belt, right?
Well, only if it actually, you know, swayed the vote by 30% or whatever I needed, but.
Right. Yeah, one more would have done it probably. So sorry to rub that in, but. Yeah,
no, I'm saying like, I still need a bunch of help, right? So like, even if I had one more top 8, I'm not sure that I would be a lock or anything. It would realistically take a lot more, because like you just look at the metrics for someone like Shota, right? And yes, he didn't have a lot of top 8s, but he was very, very good at finishing in the money and putting up top 16s and just being a little bit short. And granted, Shota did it his own way, right? Like you can do both. However, when I played bad decks, I would not make the money. I would probably not even day 2, you know? So my stats across the board are way worse as a result. And it's not even a potential talking point that people can like make an argument to vote for me because of like, oh, I have X top 16s. It's like they look at my stats and they're just bad.
Right.
So they can't even justify it to themselves. Yeah, exactly. It's like, wait, you've played in 50 Pro Tours and you have like, I don't know, 15 caches or whatever. Maybe that's low or something. I don't know. But yeah, those stats are bad. They're real bad.
Next life, you'll do it right.
I'm living my best life now, man. I have no regrets. I'm just saying that like for kids today, figure out what your goals are and then, you know, actually work towards those goals. And I think if you asked me in like 2006, whenever the Hall of Fame was announced, like what I wanted my end goal to be, Hall of Fame probably would have been it.
Yeah.
But yeah, for me, it was like, oh, there's always going to be another tournament. And technically that's true. I could continue playing in Pro Tours. I just found something that I like doing a lot more just in general. So here we are.
Here we are indeed. And I'm so glad to hear you come around to that point, that this is what you'd rather be doing. You have found the thing that was actually driving you this whole time. It was to sit here and talk to my ass every single week. Sorry about
Dude,
that.
What a conclusion
for your life to reach.
I tried to talk to you for years, man. I tried to work with you for tournaments, talk to you about decks. It led to some Niv-Magus elementals, you know? So like, it was clear that it was going to go places, you know? We were going to do big things.
Yeah, to rapid elimination. Speaking of playing bad decks at PTs.
it all comes full circle. Look at what my legacy would have been if I didn't play against 5 Jund decks.
That's true. You could have been a superstar.
My favorite moment in that tournament, by the way, was I play a Niv-Magus Elemental against Gadenis playing Storm. Mm-hmm. And God, what happened? I think he played a land. I played a land and a Niv-Magus. He played a land. God, I'm butchering this. No, maybe I played Niv-Magus and then he played a land and I was like, you know, can you kill me this turn or something? And he was like, I don't think so. And I was like, well, you're not getting another turn. And he's like, bolt your Niv-Magus Elemental. And I was like, free spell, pitch it, untap, kill you.
Got him.
You know, so I was like, yeah, Storm deck with a Lightning Bolt turn two kill you, great, you know?
When it did its thing, it looked very impressive, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I did beat all the non-Jund decks I played against, but, you know, people don't remember that. They don't care. They're just like, you played this deck in a field full of Jund, you're a moron. It's like, you're not wrong.
You're a big stupid. Yep.
But I'm serious, man. Like, the podcast, making content, helping people, it matters way more to me than doing well in tournaments myself. It's not even close. I'm super happy with where I am. And that leads to me taking a little bit of a step back from playing tournament Magic. And certainly, like, when I'm at these tournaments, I am probably going to fall back into my old ways to some degree, where it's like, yo, you should play Rakdos Knights. I'm going to be over here playing a modern PTQ with an experimental Valakut deck or whatever, because I am playing to learn now, not to win.
Totally fine approach, and I support that for you right now. I think there is much more to be gained for our listeners if you are out there taking chances rather than just playing the best deck and racking up wins. That doesn't really do anything for other people. It does a lot for you. It doesn't do much for our listeners. And listeners come first at this point. I totally agree with your stance on all of this. It's like the reason I got engaged in a more formal type of Magic. Like, I was very content just playing a bunch of Magic online, learning a bunch and figuring stuff out. But the reason I wanted to do more was so I had these type of opportunities. And maybe you can make those happen by just playing Magic online forever and never actually going to a GP. But at some point I was like, nope, if I want to make this happen, I'm going to have to get out there at least a little bit. I basically capped it at getting out there just a little bit. But this was always the end goal. And I totally agree with you. It is very, very awesome to be able to get to do this every week.
Well, you played online and did well, and the people who paid attention knew who you were, but it is very difficult to actually get on someone's radar when you're not streaming or promoting yourself on social media and stuff like that. You know, like, how do you get these opportunities unless you are actually making yourself known to people? And what you did was just accidental, I think, where you're like, you know, friends with Jason Ford or whatever, and then he sings your praises to me and we end up chatting a little bit and I'm just like, oh, this guy's great, you know? So that is kind of what you did, but it wasn't with some end goal in mind necessarily. You were just like, oh, you know, I'm out here meeting people and this is cool.
Right. No. So my end goal was this, and these steps of actually even like going out and meeting Jason Ford to like take the first step down that path is getting myself out of my house basically to go play GPs and like getting involved in the community. So granted, it's not like it was a clear set out path. Certainly it was just dumb luck and happenstance that our paths crossed and not like part of my master plan, but putting those balls in motion was basically the decision I had to make if I wanted to ultimately end up making content and being involved in the Magic space to a greater degree.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about this more? Like, I have a half written article basically about how to make content, or rather like how I approach it. And I think you and I have a lot of the same fundamental ideas and stuff. And Command Zone just released a podcast basically about similar stuff, just in a different way. It was more about the how-to aspects, like the actual details. It's like, you know, this is how you look for equipment and, you know, stuff like that. And they had a lot of good advice for the other stuff too. But like, if you could go back and do it all over again, or if you could do it now compared to 10 years ago, like, how would you actually approach trying to get your name out there?
Oh, that's such a hard question. It is a very hard question, because like, a lot of the things I was able to do were predicated upon having successes like just randomly, and not only in Magic, but also in other aspects of my life. So if I take any kind of like hard line approach to, okay, I have to get my foot in the Magic door, I cannot live doing anything else, my whole process like breaks down. I can only talk about how I live the experience. And a lot of my experience is just, like you said, founded on randomly meeting certain people. And like, a huge portion of it is just dumb luck that we're friends and wanted to make content together. And that certainly could have broke a million different ways. So it's hard for me to like try and create the playbook on how you get your first shots. Because for me, it's just dumb luck. I have thoughts now about like people coming up. And like now that I'm embedded in the scene, I do see, you know, who we want to work with and who we try to help further their platforms. And there are a lot of common trends there, but it's very hard for me to like rewrite my own history because it is predicated on luck to such a large degree.
Yeah, but what if it's not you, right? What if it's, you know, someone in a different situation? Maybe it's just too far from what you know to be able to speak on it.
No, I mean, I think it's just like, get your stuff out there, like do things. That's it. If this is what you want to do, start doing it and do it as much as you can and as much as you love doing it and as much as it fits within like the other things you have to prioritize in your life. But like, it shouldn't feel like work if this is what you love. You should just be out there like on Twitter talking to people. Like one of the clearest examples I can think of is when we were talking to Yeoman going back like years ago and just being like, you should do this 50 deck challenge. And Yeoman steps up, knocks it out of the park, inspires tons and tons of people with his deck list and kind of gets the ball rolling in a lot of ways just by being willing to put in a bunch of work and to just a little bit like scream into the void. Like I'm sure doing that first little bit of content when you're not sure if anyone is going to listen. And I did that before. I wrote for very small websites before I wrote for SCG, just randomly email an editor and say, hey, can I write something for your site? And they said yes. And I did it with no expectation of getting paid. Not to say that that's correct. Like you certainly get value from your work. If you are, you know, in a position to create value from it, do it.
Don't get paid in exposure, please.
Yeah,
do not accept that as payment.
It's not a valid thing. You certainly have a right to be compensated, but like I did it. So I'm not going to bash anyone who chooses to do it. I understand that sometimes you just need eyeballs on your stuff. It sucks that people can take advantage of that, but like try and get something out of the deal is what I'll say. Like there are other values you can get besides just exposure, right? Like if you're getting really good insight from someone you respect on your writing process, or you're getting editing from someone, like all those things do matter, but just like pure exposure, yeah, that's not a way to get paid.
Agreed. Like how many people do you currently follow on Twitter that are people that maybe you haven't met in real life or that don't have a pro tour pedigree?
I mean, there's definitely just a bunch who I've come across from years and years of Twitter adoption. Like I was there pretty early on in the platform's life, and there's a lot of people I know, but my follow number is very, very low. And I often feel bad about it because there's a lot of people I really like who I don't follow, but I also am a very habitual Twitter user and I expect my feed to look a certain way and have certain things. And when a bunch of other stuff shows up, it kind of freaks me out. And then I unfollow those people quickly. So my number is very low, but there are a lot of people with just no pedigree, just like people who I think I often see contributing something interesting and I want to know what they're up to.
Yeah. Yeah. My follow number was very low for a long time also, because I was just like, I only want people who tweet like premium hits. You know, whenever I go on Twitter, I just want like the A plus stuff, right? So I think the smallest I ever got it to after years of using Twitter and like following a bunch of people was like, I cut it down to like 40 people or something.
That's tight. That's a real tight list.
Yeah. And I don't even want to claim that like that list was accurate for like what I was seeking out, you know, but realistically, I don't think that's a great way to use a platform, especially something like Twitter, where now a lot of conversations are happening and like you don't even get to see it at all if you're not following people who are in the same space. And yeah, it's like, you know, people are making shit posts and stuff like that, but it's like, whatever, I can deal with some of that. Like you get to keep scrolling, you know? So as long as it's not the entirety of your feed, I think you're good. And it has allowed me to get to know people a little bit better and find people who I'm like, oh, this person like actually knows their stuff and is someone who I would like to work with in the future and things like that. So like, I think my life has basically improved since I started following more people and wasn't trying to make Twitter something it wasn't, basically. Okay. But yeah, basically what I'm getting at is that, like, yeah, if you are out there contributing and like talking to people, and I don't mean just like make it a point to respond to every single tweet you see or whatever, but certainly like when you have thoughts and you have an opinion and it's well thought out and you actually believe in it, you know, feel free to share it and have that discussion. Don't just like, you know, say something to yourself and then move on. Right. Like I think Brian and I probably do that way too much, actually.
I will say that I take everyone who tweets at me, I take their opinion seriously. There's nobody I discount. Same. If I've never heard of you, if I have no idea who you are, if you are sharing information with me, I give you equal footing to anyone else on the planet, and I'm willing to consider your input just holistically. Like it is what it is. Let's see what there is to this person's theory.
No, that's true.
I don't know that everyone does that, but a lot of people do.
No, that's fair. That's a good point too, where obviously you have to look at it from the point of view of the person that you're tweeting at and trying to interact with, because I don't know. So I have 45,000 followers on Twitter or something like that. And that's over the course of a decade. So I don't imagine all of them are active users or anything, but for someone with larger accounts, it's like, I can't even imagine how you use Twitter, right? Like I try and respond to every single person that tweets at me with a question or is trying to engage in discussion and stuff like that. But with double the amount of followers or triple, quad, whatever, I can't imagine having the time to do all that stuff. So certainly be cognizant of that. But like for smaller people, basically anyone with, you know, less followers than me, I think you can expect that they're at least going to like read your thing. And yeah, Brian and I have the experience of like, we don't even read it and just automatically denounce you. You know, it's like we do read it. We do give thought to it. Maybe we don't have time to respond to it or whatever, but like it is a good way to actually just engage with people. I think anytime you're talking at them specifically and your point is valid and it's clear that you are saying smart stuff and like trying to engage in thoughtful discussion and stuff like that, like people want to be a part of that. Right. So like they'll respond to you. And if your interaction is pleasant, they'll remember you also. Right. So,
right.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to go about it. I mean, if you have nothing good or thoughtful or whatever to say, I mean, that sucks, I guess. But I feel like people do have a lot of those things that they can say and bring to the conversation. And maybe it's just like, oh, you know, this is me. I think about this stuff all the time. It's not that special or whatever. But like you're probably underestimating how impactful like the stuff that you can say or bring to the table actually is.
Sure. And if you think about it, like this carried out is probably an extension of my own experience, right? Because now we're going back in time and we're talking about an in-person snowball of relationships that eventually leads me to this scenario where I'm making content with you. But we're kind of updating that for a digital age and talking about a digital snowball of relationships where you're just like involved in the conversation and contributing positively and thoughtfully. And that's enough to snowball a series of relationships that can ultimately lead to meaningful content creation too. So Interesting how that idea has been updated.
Yeah, I mean, I think things were harder in our day for someone who is either completely new or relatively unknown. You know, even if you're an online grinder or whatever, but we're not making content and social media didn't exist and stuff. It's like, yeah, you could show up and maybe some people wouldn't know who you are, but not really. And I think that now you have so much more opportunity to actually network and get yourself out there and have people end up following you too, right? Because it's not like, oh, I want to engage with Brian so that Brian notices me and then we get to be friends or whatever. It's like, I engage with Brian, other people read the thread and see it and follow you as a result. So you get to also like cultivate your own following by just being public facing. So that can also lead to things where you just do stuff yourself. You're like, hey, I'm streaming. And now you have like 1,000 followers on Twitter and that contributes to
nice little base going.
Yeah. You being able to do that and jumpstart that. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, things are very different, but I do think it is very doable. And there are plenty of people who have just kind of organically started their own thing. And I mean, I kind of did that, but it was also while I was playing a bunch and doing pretty well, and I moved around a lot, so I was involved in a bunch of different communities, so I would, you know, be friends or acquaintances with like 50 or 100 local people from a bunch of different communities who would all, not all, but like a lot of them would ask me questions from time to time, and I did my best to respond to those people, you know? And then when it came time to be like, hey, I'm streaming or I'm doing this podcast, a lot of people were like, oh, you know, he was very positive, very helpful, and I want to check out his stuff or subscribe to his Patreon or whatever it is, right? So I think there's a lot of opportunity to actually do stuff like that. It does take time, though.
I will say, too, there's also a lot of space right now. There is room for everyone to make content, and it can be niche content, too. Like, it could be stuff that only appeals to a very select section of the audience, and hopefully you can reach your people who feel the same way as you do and will be on board with your very niche stuff that, if you hit hard with people, you can get a very dedicated audience, even if you're not trying to reach as many people as possible, is what I'm saying. So don't think like, oh, I'm into this thing, nobody else is. Like, if you want to do it, do it. And I think people are very supportive right now. Like, I know us as a brand and as a podcast, I don't have any competitors. And that's not me putting like myself above anyone else. It's just literally, I'm not competing with anyone else. I want to lift everyone up and give everyone a platform and make sure everyone gets to talk about Magic all the time. And I think that just benefits the game and what we do. And it's more information for me to engage with, and it's more to learn. And there's no downside to as many people being in this game as possible, as I see it. And I think a lot of people feel the same way and will help you out along the way.
You know how I get to keep track of what's going on in the Magic community and just like know all the things and know what people are working on and know what all the technology is and then share that with people, like basically cut through all the crap and be like, all right, here are the three things that I learned this week. A lot of it is from consuming other people's content. So like I want more content out there. Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah. It just benefits all of us.
And again, digital age, I think that written articles are something I absolutely love, and I spend a lot of time on my phone, but a lot of it is spent actually just like reading things from like Medium or news sites or Magic content or whatever, and just like learning about things. And it's probably because I grew up with just reading things, but I can also like read while my friends are having a conversation next to me rather than like having to get headphones to listen to a video or whatever. Like, it's just enough of an inconvenience for me that I haven't really fully made the switch into video and streaming and things like that. But I think that written is kind of on the low. Like, if you're really good at it, people are going to consume it, but it has to be very good in order for people to actually care. And things that are good information in a very small amount of time, like if you are doing like stream clips or short-ish YouTube videos, or I mean, the ultimate thing is just a sideboarding guide with no words. Think about what gets the most traction on Magic Social, aside from like, you know, the random drama stuff, right? It is sideboarding guides, straight up.
Mm-hmm. Picture of your deck, a picture of a word pad that has your sideboarding guide on it. Boom, done. Enjoy your 200 retweets and 600 likes.
Easy, easy. Especially if it's a popular deck, right? Something that there hasn't been a lot of content on. Like, you can literally just do that. You could pick up a deck, play it for 2 days, 3 days, however long it takes, maybe longer, whatever, and learn the intricacies. Be like, there is a hole in the market that no one else has filled yet. Here is my Dredge sideboarding guide or whatever. And people love it. Absolutely love it. Even if they're not using it themselves, they still get to learn very quickly. And like, people just like to share things to then have people share the thing that they shared, right?
Sure.
And whenever I retweet a sideboarding guide because I know that my followers will like to see it. That's it. You know, you post a good sideboarding guide, I'm going to retweet it to 45,000 people.
Yeah, it's a straightforward path forward, but I think I want to see more people working in that space and putting useful information out there. And I'm sure we will see that as time goes on. Now that especially we have identified that there's a lot of room there to be able to do that stuff. Like, think about the other two accounts that we run, the two Decklist account. It's just sharing other people's work, and it gives us the ability to help them get their stuff out there and makes a useful product for us. So there's just a lot of space to share information in this particular realm that we should all be taking advantage of.
Right. And not only does Arena Decklist, Pioneer Decklist help prop up other people, you know, it's like we encourage them to, like, if they played their deck on stream or whatever, like, share the link to the VOD in case people want to watch it, you know. But, like, for the most part, it is providing the most amount of value for the least amount of investment on the end of the consumer, right? Because they get to consume the decklist and the sideboarding guide. If it's not a thing that they're interested in, they just get to move on. But if it's like, oh, here's a decklist that looks really cool, if I want to know more, I can then watch this VOD, right? But for the most part, it's just like, people just want to see cool deck lists. And if they're interested in Dredge or they play Dredge, it's like, yeah, they want to see how someone else thinks that they should sideboard or whatever. You don't need to write like an 8,000 word primer necessarily, because people just don't have time for it. And that's not how they want to consume content right now. And that's a big part of it, is just like figuring out what people actually want and giving it to them. And we've kind of bucked against this for a while, where it's like, yo, sideboarding guides realistically aren't super helpful. It's not how we would prefer to teach you, because ultimately we want people to be thinking about Magic and be trying to get better and figure things out on their own, not just us giving them a fish, right? But not everyone has time to do all that stuff. And some people just get to play FNM or just get to play whatever local tournament they have on the weekend. And, you know, some people also just like want to show up to a tournament every once in a while and feel semi-competent, right? And having the sideboarding guide allows you to do that. So now we're actually making sideboarding guides and like putting them out there and trying to figure out what is a deck that there isn't a lot of content on, so that we can provide something for people that want it but otherwise can't have it because no one has made content on it yet, you know? So we are trying to provide as much value to people as we possibly can. That's why we focus on whatever the PTQs, the GPs are, because that's what most of our audience is engaging in, is stuff like that. So it is the best way that we can help our audience is doing stuff that is relevant to them and giving them things that they want to see. The end.
Yeah, and I think we'll continue to explore new ways to do that. And I think we'll continue to be inspired by the people also making content in this space. So
yeah.
Do that.
Always thinking about
make
it.
Stuff. Make stuff for us to look at. I appreciate it. I love sideboard guides. I'll take all the fish you want to throw at me.
I hate it.
No, nope. Really love hate it. Love it. Just a starting point. When you look at a sideboard guide, you have not signed a binding contract that you will always sideboard in that fashion. All you're doing is downloading someone else's ideas about the matchup, and you can then totally make your own conclusions from it. Or you can follow and agree with what they said. As long as you're being critical about it, there is literally zero flaws in using a sideboard guide.
My problem with that is that the people who ask for sideboarding guides are not necessarily going to do that. They are going to follow it. That is what they want to use it for. And I think that that's incorrect.
Okay. But they will get to a place where they will either evolve from that state. Like, you don't think if I send you a sideboard guide and it's got something strictly erroneous in it, like you've sideboarded in this dead card multiple times, you don't think people are looking to make deviations from that throughout the course of a tournament? They may not make it immediately. They might just follow it. But I don't think there's anyone who is engaging with Magic in any meaningful fashion, in any way that is ultimately going to lead to success, that isn't going to look at something and be like, meh, I'm not too sure of this. And it's not to say it happens instantaneously, but I think every single person playing the tournament will eventually step away from those hardline sideboard guides and make their own conclusions.
The problem I have with that is if you are interested in doing things differently than the sideboarding guide, it should also come along with a discussion.
That's fine. Sometimes that discussion is internal, though. Like, I read sideboarding guides all the time online and deviate from them immediately. Like, I don't necessarily need to talk to the person who made the sideboarding guide, as long as I have my foundation for doing so.
That's because we are the people who are engaged enough in Magic to be making the content and telling people what is right and wrong. But for someone who is attending a tournament and is like, I basically know nothing, I'm starting from scratch, give me a sideboarding guide, that will help me the most. If your argument is like, oh, eventually they'll change it to how they see fit, I don't think that that's very realistic to expect, because I think that if that were the case, like they were already thinking kind of on that level, like, hey, this thing might not be right or whatever, I think that they would be more interested in having the discussion along with getting the sideboarding guide. That's my
point. But look, you have to give opportunities for growth. And like, that's the growth opportunity, is where you make this conclusion and you do something else and maybe it blows up in your face and it goes wrong. And you see that as you unpack down the road. And I understand you're saying is, oh, they won't actually met that out and understand where it blows up. And okay, sometimes they won't, but you have to give yourself the opportunity to do so, or you're never going to evolve as a player. And you can't just paint by numbers forever.
I encourage that. I'm just saying that I don't think that a lot of people that are asking for sideboarding guides are intending to use them that way, which is not really how I would recommend engaging with Magic if your goal is to get better. Like I said, there are plenty of people who don't have time and just want to play the tournament, feel competent. That's great. But I don't think just saying like, oh, well, no one is actually going to listen to the sideboarding guide. It's like, I don't think that's true. I think that there are plenty of people out there who are just going to follow it to the T and like not think about it too much.
Forever. Till the end of time.
Well, so the problem is like they're not going to play that deck every single day of the week. They're going to play it once in a tournament and just be done because, you know, their next tournament's in 2 weeks or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess like it doesn't matter then if they're not trying to gain mastery of a deck, then this is just kind of a moot discussion because the results don't matter. And this is just a pursuit of enjoyment. And this is outside the scope. But if you're giving a sideboard guide to someone who has tournament endeavors, they seek to achieve something, then I think always that's going to follow with at least some degree of critical thinking. And if that's not what they're trying to do, if they're not trying to achieve anything, then none of this matters anyway. So
there are other people that have the endeavor to perform well in tournaments and then ask for a sideboarding guide and they use it and follow it to a T and don't think about it.
Don't. I mean, look, these people exist. I can't deny that, but I think the numbers are, they're not as skewed as you like. If people want to grow, they will put in the work and do so. They're listening to this conversation right now. You think they're going to go through 10 minutes of us beating this back and forth and not at least have that moment where they think, okay, wait, maybe this is that spot where I'm supposed to consider this change?
I hope so. I mean, dude, that's why I do what I do. And that's right. Why I initially rallied against these, because I think if you do that, if you just follow the sideboarding guide, you're doing yourself a disservice. And if you do have like tournament aspirations and stuff like that, and you have enough time to attend tournaments and practice, put in the time, effort, whatever it takes to actually reach those goals, then when you get a sideboarding guide, you should try and have a conversation with the author about the hows and whys of, you know, why these cards are coming in where, you know?
And that's kind of on us, right? Like we can do a better job presenting this information. Granted, we're talking about a scenario where we're trying to do like quick and dirty sideboarding guides. So this is a little bit outside of that. But the fact that that's what people want is a bit problematic when there is still a space in a sideboarding guide to teach all these lessons, right? And it's like, so nobody wants those lessons.
My point is that I could write an article in tweets and it would get less traction, even though it had more information than just the quick and dirty.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
Okay. I can provide that content, but I'm just telling you that, you know, written stuff is doing far worse than just pretty infographics and videos and highlights.
I know. I know this to be true.
That's where I'm getting my information, basically.
I want to argue that there is a disconnect between just like sheer metrics and sheer clicks and actual dissemination of meaningful information and how it changes thought processes to have these things out there, and like what actually like effective hits is an argument I want to make, but I have no grounds for making it. And
no, I agree with you. And like, that's one of the things that I preface with like my Twitter account number, right? It's like, it's 45,000, but that number's not accurate.
Right.
Right. So when I tweet something and it gets retweeted X amount. I think like 5 years ago, you know, I was followed by a lot of bots and the bots would just instantly like and retweet things. And it's like, those aren't real. Right. And people are just retweeting sideboard guides because they know that their followers will like them. Mm-hmm. So it's easier mm-hmm. to like go viral when it's bite-sized right. versus this written piece where like people aren't even necessarily going to read what it is. Right. It's like TLDR. Like they're just not even going to look at it anyway, whatever. Like people want them. I'm going to give them to them. I do think that they are helpful to some degree, especially in the context that you're saying, but they do kind of make me feel bad if the way that people interact with them are saying like they want to get qualified for a bunch of pro tours and then they just take the sideboard and guide and run with it. You know, it just, it's not conducive to actually hitting your goals.
I have faith that that's not who we are speaking to presently. Our listeners are all better than that. Thank you, listeners, cool. for being the best listeners.
No, I agree. Our listeners are great. Our Discord is especially great. Mm-hmm. And I hope that that's the case, but we have a lot of listeners and I don't want to say not a ton of people because we have a literal ton of people in our Discord, but you know, there's a big gap there. There's like a 90% gap basically. So
yep.
There's a lot of people out there interacting with sideboarding guides in these ways. I believe it. And it makes me feel bad.
If you want to change, come to the Discord. We'll all talk about sideboarding guides there.
Well, I hope we have the constructive discussion. I love that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's good. It's great.
Yeah. Agreed.
Anyway, there are a few other things I want to talk about. How are you okay. feeling? How are you feeling with your illness?
How do I sound? That's the question.
You sound delightful, man. You sound okay. great as always.
Okay. As long as you can't hear the horror going on behind my sinus cavity, then I am willing to continue to keep talking right now.
Cool. I think a lot of these things are connected, which is kind of why I want to drag the show on. And I did kind of want to have like a 2019 year in review sort of feel to this, but like, organized play and as far as like people's goals and what they are trying to accomplish, things are different now. And I don't want to talk too much about, you know, certain things being worse or certain things being better. I just want to talk about how things are and how that interacts with people's goals. And I see a lot of people talking about like, you know, things are worse. And like, certainly we're part of that, right? But realistically, the last few weeks, like the last month, the things that I've heard are just that PTQs are very, very small. You know mm-hmm. what that means?
Easy queues.
Easy to qualify.
Yeah.
So if there's something that's like undervalued or whatever, right? Like say Renin 6 is like $1,000 card and booster packs are $3. Eventually you're just going to open up enough packs to make the price of Renin 6 come down.
Yep.
And it seems like right now, OP is kind of in a lull for a lot of different reasons. Like the season's not good, standard's not been good, changes are confusing and whatever. I get why people are not playing, but if you care about qualifying, this is the chance. I've just heard so many stories of like 12-player PTQs and 20-player PTQs, and GPOKC was 300. Like I normally would not consider playing in a GP main event, especially because I had like one buy or zero buys and nine rounds is a lot and I got plenty of excuses, right? But if it was super small, if it was like as small as OKC, like I'm in there, you know, like a tournament where I could top 8 at like X and 3, I am in.
You and I were having a conversation with I'm not going to name him, a Magic Hall of Famer this weekend about how maybe for the first time in Magic's history, GPs are net positive EV if you're a really good Magic player.
Right.
Like, yeah, like it just might be worth playing.
The stories of people going 6-0 and like locking up cash, even though they might not date you, stuff like that.
Yeah. It's absurd. I mean, that's wild. That's what we all clamored for a long time. So there's two paths you could take. And as you mentioned, you could be like, oh, OP's in a lull right now. Everything's disastrous. Or you could be like, wow, maybe it's actually time to play GPs again as just tournaments which provide some amount of value to me. And it's tough. Certainly the circumstances still have to be right. The travel has to be right. It is hard to pull positive EV out of a GP unless all those things line up. But where they do, there's a really good case for playing in main events right now. And it's also a really good time to qualify for your first Pro Tour. If it's something you wanted to do for a long time, the odds are very good in these smaller field PTQs. And maybe it's a nice time to double down on that commitment. If you are one of those people, of which there are many, of which I included myself for a period, who's just like, I just want to see a Pro Tour. I just want to go. I want to play against these people I followed for years. I want to know what the deal is. And that's something I have to check off my bucket list. This is a really good time to double down on that goal.
Yeah, I agree. And it might not be fun because maybe your friends aren't going, or maybe you don't like the format or whatever, but hey, what's your goal? You know, do you want to get there? Or do you only want to get there when the conditions are to your liking? You know, like you're playing a deck that you designed yourself, or all of your friends are there to see you and watch it happen. Or, you know, maybe if there's only coverage of the tournament because that's important to you, you know, your family can watch you win the GP or whatever. Cool. Those things do matter and they should stay important to you. But at the end of the day, if your goal is to qualify, I think it's good right now. And I certainly don't expect, you know, 20,000 people to listen to this podcast and then go out and immediately register for PTQs, because then it makes it less good, right? There's certainly a point in which it is no longer like super profitable to play GP main events, or the PTQ numbers will go back up and everything. But like right now, right this second, if you are the only one that changes your behavior and you're the 13th person in that PTQ, it's great for you. Obviously, there's a line where that breaks the other way.
Yeah. One of the interesting things about OP is that it kind of doesn't matter. I know that's a weird thing to say for someone who cares as much about OP as I do and who is tweeting about it all the time, but ultimately your personal level of engagement will always dictate your experiences with Magic. Like how you choose to commit and the rules you set around your engagement and what you're trying to achieve are going to shape your experiences more than anything that's going on behind the scenes. So if this is a point in time where what OP is offering actually lines up pretty good with your personal goals, don't worry about all the stuff that's going on behind the scenes, and don't worry about the negativity and nonsense. Just commit in the way that works for you, and I think you'll be rewarded by it.
Yeah. Another big part of this is, for whatever issues OP has, there are still Magic tournaments, there are events, there's multiple online clients, there are multiple formats. You should be able to find something that is appealing to you and figure out a way to interact with Magic that makes you happy and like scratches whatever itch that Magic does.
Yeah.
Right. And I bring up the goals thing because PTQs are small for the most part. You know, obviously that's not the case 100% of PTQs or whatever. Some communities are just super thriving still. But if your goal is to get to the PT, do that. But if your goal is not to get to the PT, then whatever, you know, like go play Pioneer on Magic Online or go to a Command Fest or something. Like those events are dope. Just interact with Magic in a way that makes you happy. And if you're not happy grinding and doing that stuff, like don't do it, you know, or scale it down or only go to certain events. Just like do whatever makes you happy and comfortable. Don't feel pressured or anything to interact with Magic a certain way, maybe because, you know, that's how everyone else does it, right? It's like you have friends that are super competitive. They want to get on the Pro Tour. They're going to every event. You do that, you're just not having any fun. Maybe it's not for you, you know, but maybe the opposite is true. Maybe all your friends play Commander and you aspire to something else. And it's like, well, you know, what are you aspiring to? Is it to get on the PT? Then go play a PTQ.
To your point of lots of different ways to engage right now, I feel actually obligated to bring this up, given how we talked a bunch about declining GP numbers and continue to talk about it. But we were at GP Portland. You were not at last year's GP Portland, so you're not able to make this comparison. But I can tell you, as far as I could perceive it, there were as many people at this GP Portland as there were at last year's event. And last year's event was a modern GP that had like 1,100-ish main event entrants. So the main event is about 600 people smaller, about half the size, but you walk into the hall and it's just as packed, and it's people engaging with Magic the way they want to. They're doing mystery drafts. They're doing the Command Zone. They're doing the modern PTQs. They're grinding side events. they actually have very much succeeded in making magic fests out of GPs. And the weird side effect that I don't think any of us saw coming is that GP main events have gotten way, way smaller. But you could still just go to a GP and have a great experience regardless of the size of the main event. I have actually enjoyed my GPs more this year when I've had the freedom to engage with them in the fashion I choose rather than just being tied to the main event.
Oh, yeah. It's not close, dude.
Yep.
So I played this Valakut deck that I'm going to write about on Star City next week in a PTQ. And it was like, all right, I was 2-0. I lost. I learned a bunch of stuff. I already had ideas for like how to rebuild the deck and everything, and was probably eliminated from top 8 contention. I don't know, but it was also 7 p.m. because this PTQ started at 3 and I hadn't eaten and I was hungry, you know? So it's like, all right, I'm going to drop. I'm going to go get some food. I'm going to hang out with some people. Just wander over to like the other side of the hall. I see hundreds of people just jamming mystery booster drafts. They ran out of mystery boosters, Brian.
Mm-hmm.
By Sunday morning, like you had to get in line Sunday if you wanted to get mystery booster stuff. And like, granted, you know, the packs are eBaying for 30 or whatever. And like the drafts were very cheap and they had to make it so you couldn't like join the event and drop just to take your 3 packs or whatever, which is kind of absurd.
Right.
So it had that going on, but like, it seemed like the vast majority of people were just playing with them and enjoying it.
I think so. Yeah. I think people just enjoy it. Granted, it has a lot of value, but a lot of that value is wrapped up in how much people have enjoyed that format.
Yeah. So that just speaks to doing whatever is good for you. Right. I think before the GPs basically only had the main event and there were some other side events and stuff. But now it's like with the Command Fest, the Mystery Booster stuff, all the different PTQs, like the draft PTQ, you have a lot of options, even at just what is effectively like this one tournament weekend, to be able to figure out a way to have the most amount of fun that you possibly can. So I actually like the fact that you can look at Portland in back-to-back years and be like, the attendance is effectively the same, just it has moved away from the main event. And to me, that reads like a lot of people are doing just that. And there's probably just more net fun being had in the room as a whole.
Yeah, I'm getting that vibe. And I don't want to sound like I've done a 180 on my opinions of OP. Like there's still stuff to be sorted out 100%, but there's upside with the downside. There's no reason to be strictly doom and gloom about it. Big part of it has been the change to GPs.
Yeah, the problem is you can do both, right? Like you can still...
I would like to think so, yes.
You can have a main event and have it be appealing to people and also still do all the cool side of event stuff. And there's also a lot of stuff still missing from Magic Fests that would actually make them a fest and not just like, oh, here's a bunch of different tournaments in like varying degrees of social to... What was the other one that BDM said? Social and aspiring, I think, instead of like casual competitive.
Yep.
Which I think is a much better label to place on things, you know?
Agreed. Like, I like that.
There are certainly competitive folks at Command Fest. It's no joke. You know, people were like sharking side events with their like turn 3 kill combo decks and just swimming in prize pool tickets, and they were very pleased with themselves.
Oh, right? It's like so, that. I didn't realize that was going on.
Not all of it, but like there are those people, right? So it's like, okay. Commanders is a casual format. It's like, no, it's a social format, right? The people who spend like hours, you know, building their decks and engaging with people and like going on EDH rec and looking at what other people are doing and like tuning their decks, like looking through Scryfall to find like maybe a card that they missed or whatever. It's like, there's no way in hell you can call that person a casual Magic player. It's just not true.
Right.
A lot of different ways to play, and they are serving a very large portion of the community, which I obviously love to see, but it's like, I don't know. There's like panels and showcases and stuff like that they could be doing that would be sweet. But kind of similarly to like the sealed versus draft PTQ thing, it's like one is a lot easier to do, or at least not do.
Yeah, we still hope for more improvement as time goes on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, yeah, things are trending up in some degrees, down in others, but it's a learning process, I suppose. Yeah, man, that was it. I wanted to talk about OP a little bit and not drag on the negatives of it and just kind of look at this year as, you know, the way things have shifted and how my role has basically like fully shifted to content creator and how it's basically just made me very happy. And I love what I'm doing. And I don't know, maybe I blew it by not doing this sooner. I have no idea, but I'm very happy with where I am. And I expect more of that to happen in the coming years and stuff. And yeah, if I accidentally qualify, maybe I'll go to a PT or whatever, but I'm not really focused on that. I'd rather see other people get there instead of me.
Now, I'm glad you have found a place where your participation in magic is only bringing you happiness. I think that's what everyone's highest endeavor should be, is like find a way to make this give you the maximum happiness it has to offer you.
Well, competing was fun. You know, it's still like, it is fun to me. It's just not the most net fun that I could possibly have. I just found a thing I like doing better, and that's it.
I also think there's a difference between fun and happiness. And I have always felt that way.
Yeah. Yeah, those are probably bad terms. I mean, making content is far more rewarding on a daily basis, weekly basis, monthly basis for me than like, you know, winning a pro tour in 2016, 2017 or whatever. And then it's fleeting. It's gone, right? It's like, I don't get to win a pro tour every day, but I do get to help people and engage with people every day.
I think that's a great way to look at it.
So yeah, we have a question.
We do have a question. This week's question comes from Craigzy, is how I am choosing to read this name. K-R-E-I-G-Z-Y. And Craigzy has a sweet, short, simple question. And I think it flows very well with what we've been discussing all cast long, kind of a potpourri-ish cast as we cover a bunch of different topics we've just been wanting to talk about. This is another one we've been wanting to talk about. Craigzy wants to know, what's the AD game plan for 2020?
Yes.
Jerry, would you like to answer this question?
Yeah, that was my answer.
Game plan. Yes, that's all you have for me?
You know, just like, oh, yeah, what are y'all going to do in 2020? Yes. Yes,
that's
we are.
That's probably a good way of putting it. Knowing all the stuff that we presently have in the works, and I feel like maybe this is just in my own head. I feel like in some ways I have withdrawn a bit lately. Part of that has been being sick. Part of that has been working really hard on a bunch of stuff behind the scenes as we tried to put together something special for this brand in 2020. There's a lot of stuff, but I don't think we can tell them about it now. Like, are there any kind of hints we can give right now towards what we're working on?
It sucks because we have to wait a couple more months until things are finalized, right? And right. At that point, we do want to share things. We are going to be doing more stuff, better stuff, cooler stuff. I think, you know, people are going to like it. We are basically trying to, you know, double down on our efforts to provide content. And just this year was just so weird, right? There are just like a bunch of changes. We started the Arena Decklist account. We went from like zero to 20,000 followers in 8 months. And it's like, wow, this is eye-opening for the type of content that people actually want and will consume. Because in 2018 or literally any other year, right? It's like, if you ask someone what type of content they would like to consume, no one would say a Twitter account that just retweets deck lists, you know, like that doesn't make any sense. But yeah, it has informed a lot. Well, not a lot, but like some of my decision-making as far as like how to proceed and like, you know, the things that I thought I knew were probably not entirely accurate and stuff. So like we're trying to go outside of the box, think about more stuff. And then Pioneer happened and we got to start up that Twitter account. And it made me very sad and also very happy that we were like not the first ones to market on that, which is hilarious, right?
Yeah, we found something special with the idea, sure.
Yeah, and I mean, I copied that from a person who does it in Hearthstone, you know?
Yep.
Weird times. Magic content is changing. We have to change with it. And that's not to say that we're like overhauling or changing what we do. The stuff that exists now is going
more.
To stay. Yeah.
It's more. It's that's more, the way I would sum up 2020. More.
More, not different. And like Brian said, dude, I feel the same way as you. And I feel like really bad for it. like just being withdrawn and like feeling withdrawn because I haven't been focusing on all of the normal stuff. Like I have been just like being active in the Discord and like seeing what people are saying and stuff like that. It's like, I have not had a ton of time to do those sorts of things because I was working on a bunch of stuff just like you were. And then, you know, some of it kind of got greenlit. Some of it fell through the cracks. And as a result of that, I'm like, you know, sort of beat up about the stuff that fell through, but also just kind of exhausted and realized that I was sort of working myself to death. So maybe I should stop doing that. But yeah, more is coming. Thing that I can say is that we are very, very soft locked into just doing a second podcast per week.
Ooh, we're saying that right now.
I'm going to say it.
Okay.
We've been doing 5 a month or, you know, sometimes 6 a month, depending on what month it is, right? Like we're doing an extra one per month. And I think that this is a good step forward. This is the thing that we can do, hopefully. There are obviously some hurdles, but we're trying to work on them, figure them out and everything. And that's what I want to do. I just want to make 2 podcasts a week in 2020 and obviously all the other stuff too. But like, if we can do that every single week, I'll be really happy. And then we get to have something that's like only arena centric and then only modern slash pioneer centric.
Well, we have given away one of the things that we have been working very hard on. Certainly in 2020, you can expect this to happen. I would just say it's a done deal at this point. It's going to happen within the first few months of the year for sure.
March probably.
Yeah, I think March is about the target we're looking at now. So that is just one piece of the many, many things we have been working on. And I think there's one more thing I want to talk about right now. And it's not something we often talk about here. Money is something I want to talk about. That's a weird topic to bring up.
I was wondering if you were going to go with like, you know, I just kind of like dropped a bombshell or whatever.
Right. I'm going a different direction. I'm not putting the secrets out there. I want to talk about money for a second. One of the reasons we're able to do the things we love, I mean, I shouldn't even say one of the reasons, the only reason we're able to do the things we love so much that we talk about this entire episode.
It is literally the only reason.
Yeah, it is. The support of the people who are our Patreon supporters, who are people who just work really hard to give good word of mouth to this podcast. It's all of you, all the people listening right now. You are very much the reason we are able to do this. And I will share with you, we don't take that lightly at all. And maybe you look over on our Patreon, you see our Patreon is always growing. You think Brian and Jerry are rolling in it. They're crushing it. Basically, all the growth we have had for a very, very long time, we've reinvested in the podcast. And what that means is we've upgraded stuff behind the scenes. We have spent a bunch of money on swag for our patrons and other opportunities that allow us to grow the brand. It's not lining our pockets right now. So this is just me saying to you that if you are thinking about supporting the Arena Decklist podcast and helping us in our goals to expand in 2020, the first step of which you just heard about, a second podcast every week, Patreon support means the world to us. It does so, so much for us. It lets us do all of this. And you can rest assured that the vast, vast, vast majority of your contribution is just going to making more and more magic content. This is what we love to do. This is what we're here for. We want to be here talking with y'all every week, making these great new projects come to fruition. And this is our once a year beg off. We don't do this very often. I'm going to close 2019 with our begging session as we say, make that Patreon support happen. It means the world to us. We try to do the best we can with every dollar you send our way to make the best magic content. I hope we succeeded in 2019. We're going to succeed even more in 2020. I promise you that.
We're going to crush it in 2020. And I mean, if we don't do everything as good as I want it to, at the very least, that'll be a learning experience for 2021 because we're not going anywhere. But basically everything you said is true. I mean, I feel like I don't appreciate the patrons enough. Like
you can't,
possible. I feel like I can't do enough. And there have also just like, you know, been some things where like the rewards get shipped out late and stuff like that. And it sucks. I hate it because, you know, they are the reason that we are here. It is kind of like the least that we can do is like actually do the things that we promise to do and everything. And yeah, basically I just hope that we can do better. We can always learn and try harder and everything. And that is certainly what we're going to be trying to do in 2020. And obviously, like, suggestions are always welcome. I mean, I just spent half the podcast talking about how a lot of the content that we normally made was not as effective as other stuff that we could have been doing. And like, granted, that's not necessarily something someone could have told us, but like, you know, even if people just wanted to see sideboarding guides and wanted to make a case for it, it's like, maybe that could have happened earlier. You know, I'm trying to put together like a repository of them, basically, especially for the non-rotating formats like Modern and Eternal, where like things don't change all that often, so that like when you actually do sub to the Patreon, you get like this wealth of knowledge that you can draw from. And maybe someday those sideboarding guides will come with words too. We'll see.
Yeah, we haven't talked too much about those sideboarding guides up until now, just because they don't feel done yet. But that is something else that we've worked hard for our patrons to get a little bit more value added. That's up over on our website, arenadecklist.gg. They are coming together. And that's also something else that 2020 will have more of a focus on. You can rest assured that that sideboard guide section of the website will be getting filled out for sure.
Yeah, I think there's like 20 of them now, and a lot of it has been outdated with like bands and formats moving and stuff like that. But I want to stay on top of that as much as possible, because I do think that it is the, like, it's not free for me to do them, but it is kind of free for me to do them for like decks that I have been working on and are very good.
Sure.
But yeah, like it's tough. You know, if someone's like, hey, give me an Urza sideboarding guide, it's like, well, I haven't played with that archetype, you know, like it's going to take some time to actually play the games with the deck, learn everything, and then type that up and everything. But like, there are also some people who have contributed sideboarding guides to the website and and everything. And it's like, I want to seek out those people more if you are like an expert on your archetype and everything, and actually, you know, pay people to get some work out there and everything. Like, it is important to me that we provide the most value that we possibly can. And I think that this is one way to do it. And I want to do more of things like that, not just weekly content on the day to day, but more evergreen type of stuff that you can look back on, you know, years from now. Or if someone is new getting into Magic and want to know where they can go to like catch up on things, like I want it to be us.
Also, forget weekly content. Weekly content's 2019.
Daily, yeah.
We're talking daily content 2020.
To be fair, we do that basically with like the deckless accounts and stuff like that. Like we just kind of like tripped and fell into it. And it's like, oh yeah, this is a thing that people definitely want.
Tripped and fell into working 7 days a week to make the best Magic content possible.
Yeah.
I love it. Wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, dude, it's not bad.
Yeah.
It's not bad. But no, seriously, thank you, everyone. We really appreciate it. This is episode 167. That is how long we've been around. We haven't really used the episode number titles, but
A lot of episodes. You know when I started? Do you know which episode number?
I don't know. I always thought it was in the 50s or 60s or whatever, but you told me it was like 37.
Yeah, I think it's like 34.
32? Somewhere in there. And it's like, yeah, I don't know. It felt like, not that it was bad or whatever, like me, Andrew, Majors, and then just me and Majors. It felt like that went on for longer than just 30 episodes, but we were also pretty bad about doing them every week. So that's probably why.
Yeah, that's when you're on that monthly content grind. Now that you're up to daily, it moves a lot faster.
It wasn't that bad. I think we missed like some weeks here or there, you know, but literally never missed a week with you. Is that accurate?
No, that's not accurate. When I first came on, we were still missing weeks at that point, but we haven't missed a week in a very, very long time.
Yeah. But yeah, that's the type of dedication, right? Like things shift. It is no longer me and Majors are doing this fun thing kind of for ourselves because we enjoy it. We are now beholden to other people and their expectations. And that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
I show up on time. I will never be accountable to myself ever.
But you're not going to make those Patreon bosses angry. I know that.
No. Yeah. And that's exactly what it feels like. It's like, yeah, we just have, you know, 2,000 bosses.
Luckily, we have really nice bosses. So
no,
it works
I know
out
that's
us.
The thing. It like sounds kind of bad, but it's not. Right. So you know, everyone, seriously, thank you. I cannot say this enough. I probably don't say it enough, but yeah, we do super appreciate it, and we are here for you. We want to make the best content for you. So let us know.
Thanks, everyone.
Game.
Good luck.